music is groovy. It makes you feel happy like an old-time movie. I'll tell you about the magic and the free your soul. But it's like trying to tell a stranger about a rock and roll. Oh, you believe in magic.
More than 325 million copies of Harry Potter novels have been sold worldwide. And that means a lot of muggles have been learning about magic. But are all those classes at Hogwarts just a bunch of hogwash? Well, on today's Please Explain, we will discuss all things related to magic, witchcraft, and wizardry. My guests are Dr. Michael Bailey, an assistant professor of history at Iowa State University and co-editor of the scholarly journal Magic, Ritual, and Witchcraft, and Reverend Patrick McCollum, the statewide Wiccan chaplain for the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, the author of the Wiccan text, Courting the Lady. And I'm very pleased to welcome them both to my show today. Hi.
Hi. Very nice.
Hi.
To be here.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. By the way, we will be taking listener calls at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. And you don't have to be a witch, a wizard, or a warlock to participate. You can also write in a comment at our show page at WNYC.org. Let's begin with you, Dr. Bailey. Has magic been practiced throughout the world, or is it centered in certain areas?
Magic in some form has been known in just about every culture in just about every period of history.
And did the magic rituals differ greatly from culture to culture? Would we always find, for example, a fertility ritual? Would certain objects always be used in rituals to heal the sick?
The particular methods, the items, those can vary quite considerably. What often is surprisingly constant is the purposes of the goals, things like fertility, things like healing, that is nearly universal. The methods differ very much, though.
Does interest ebb what is the other one? Anyway, rise and fall at certain times and not others?
That's hard to say, because for most historical periods, the records we have are recording governments or powerful people's opposition to magic. So what we really know is the ebbing and the flowing of opposition, fear of and opposition to magic. And that definitely does grow in some time periods, decrease in others. Whether that indicates at a more base level that actual interest or actual use of these rites is somehow increasing or decreasing, very, very hard to say.
Reverend McCollum, can we come up with a definition of magic that everyone would agree upon?
Well, that's a pretty big question, a lot like what is God or what is religion, but I could give you the short answer. Magic is the underlying force created by the divine, which initiated and put into motion all of the laws which govern creation. You could talk about it in the practice of magic, and that is mankind's attempt to understand and utilize all of the possibilities offered to us by the divine at the creation. In other words, to understand the laws of nature and how to successfully coexist with them.
Although, as we will discuss later, some of the things that magic is supposed to achieve go against the laws of nature.
I don't think so. I believe that...
You mean flying on a broomstick is something that nature really allows us to do?
Well, I don't think that people that are studying magic are really trying to fly on broomsticks. That's more the sort of things that people who oppose magic make up in order to sort of, demonize it. But I do think that magically people believed a long time ago that we could fly, and here today we are.
Although J.K. Rowling would have us flying on broomsticks, but we'll get to that later. Dr. Bailey, some scholars have called magic the second oldest profession. When does the practice of magic first appear in history? Do we know?
We only know when we start to have recordings of it, and it's as early as we can imagine. Some of the earliest writings we have are prohibitions against magic. Again, most of our sources are in opposition to. So we have prohibition against magic. We have condemnations of magic. These are things like the Code of Hammurabi contains prescriptions against magic. So
And it's in the Bible. It's in the Quran.
It's in all of these texts. It's about as early as you can get.
Do you think it's because it comes out of faith systems that predated those forms of worship? So it was always seen as the old way, the way to be overcome?
It's often categorized as an older way, and it is certainly, magic is certainly always what, well, a way to oppose magic is to define it as what the set religion that has become established opposes. If magic is, if people who employ magic, people who support magic, would see it as a way of interacting with divine forces, established religions and established priestly cultures will oppose that as a unlawful way of interacting with these forces.
But hasn't magic been absorbed into organized religions more than replaced by it? There's a fine line between miracle and magic, isn't there?
I'd almost say that religion grows out of magic. I think these basic needs to support fertility, to heal, some magical rituals can become very, very metaphysical. They can be to perpetuate right order in the universe. I think these sort of impulses are very, very basic, and the need to create rituals to perform them in some way. And then I think out of that comes more set, defined religious traditions that take over those functions to themselves and then try and categorize everything that they are excluding from themselves.
We're talking about magic, witchcraft, and wizardry on today's Please Explain with Dr. Michael Bailey, Assistant Professor of History at Iowa State University, co-editor of Magic, Ritual, and Witchcraft, and with Reverend Patrick McCollum, the statewide Wiccan chaplain for the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, author of the Wiccan text, Courting the Lady. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Reverend McCollum, where does Wicca fit into this story?
Well, to begin with, I'd like to respond a little bit to your question about is magic incorporated in modern religion. It most definitely is. Most of the major religions practicing today all utilize concepts that were used by the early shamanistic training and other people practicing magic. And even many of our religious holidays and particular ceremonies that we perform in traditional religion today come from earlier times. For example, Christmas is actually the celebration of Yule or the summer solstice, which is a much older time. Easter actually comes from the name Ostara, or Ostara, which was the goddess of resurrection prior to Christianity. And so many of these practices, including prayer, like in a Catholic church, lighting candles, certain kinds of songs and music and dance that are currently practiced in religion, all come from earlier faith groups that are now considered to be magical.
How many people in America practice Wicca?
Right now, the estimates run between about 700,000 and 1.8 million.
So more, we have about 1.5 million Hindus in the United States. They're slightly, the Wicca practitioners are about the same. How did you become involved with Wicca? Were you raised in another religious tradition?
I was originally a Methodist, and I became a Wiccan in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
After having a near-death experience, and that led to a series of investigating the concept of God, and ultimately ended up coming to Wicca.
But you wound up also becoming the Wiccan chaplain for the California prison system. How many inmates do you serve?
Well, in California, currently, I have about 2,000 Wiccan inmates that I work with. Most of them are individuals who've converted to Wicca after coming to prison. Typically, the layout is about 98% of inmates are Christian, and then a small percentage of them are Muslim and Native American and Jewish. But the Wiccans are growing. They're becoming maybe about the fourth largest group in the correctional system.
the practitioners of Wicca are usually called witches, but are the men called witches or are they called warlocks? I've always been confused about that.
Well, that's a point of confusion a lot of people have. Not all Wiccans are witches, and not all witches are Wiccans. Those two words are words used to categorize it that come from different sources. The word witch actually comes from the word witten, or wit, which means the wise ones. And in fact, many European countries today still have witten councils to help with their governments. And the word Wicca actually comes from a word Wiccar, which means to bend, and it also means the willow tree, which is talking about the willow trees that grew around the sacred wells that were the initiating points of religion in pretty much every area of the world.
So warlocks are not part of the Wiccan tradition?
No.
And then, Dr. Bailey, there are, well, maybe you could tell us about warlocks and wizards, and there are also sorcerers, enchanters, shamans. Are they each associated with different types of magic, or is there a lot of overlap here?
There is, nothing is terribly well defined. These are, historically speaking, these are typically terms that are applied to other people as a way of condemning them. So they're never scientifically defined. Warlock is an almost totally artificial term. Warlock was invented, in the grand scheme of things, quite recently, only a few hundred years old, and the purpose was to have a term for a male witch, once the term witch became so heavily associated with the female. A wizard typically implies male and typically implies more learned, complex ritual magic of some sort. Shaman typically implies a trance state and an interaction with spiritual entities in that condition. But witches, under certain circumstances, can be seen to enter trances. There can be a great deal of overlap.
Is there a British tradition that's stronger than some other places? I'm thinking about Merlin the magician, who's a positive figure in the Arthurian legends, and they involve the search for the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm. There's a positive wizard tradition in many regions of Europe. Merlin is certainly the most famous. In the medieval legends, Merlin becomes somewhat of a questionable figure, though. He's categorized as the son of the devil in certain of versions of the Arthurian legend, even though he's always a mostly positive, helpful figure to Arthur. So it gets very complex.
Reverend McCullum, where does our popular image of a witch, the black robe, the pointy hat, like the Wicked Witch of the West, come from?
Well, that really comes from very recent times. It really came from the dress of the people who were of the time, and when they were condemning people, the traditional witch, the female traditional witch that you see, is actually in Wicca called the crone. It's the old woman who has reached the end of her life, no longer bearing children, but with great wisdom. So she'd be like our American opposite, or the same as our American version of Father Time, someone who's very wise and been around for a long time. And then I think that, again, because people have tried to condemn Wicca, witchcraft, magic, all these things, they just put negative connotations on it. So to give you an example, in the 50s, when I was growing up, I was taught at school that Jews are born with tails, and male Jews are born with horns, and they have to remove them. These kinds of things are the sort of stuff people make up, and they're totally untrue, but they get ingrained in our society, and we begin to believe them as being true because there's no one to refute them.
Where were you growing up?
I was growing up in Southern California.
Well, I guess I've spent too much time on the beaches there to know about this sort of thing. What about the things like flying on a broom? Does that have a basis in old forms of witchcraft?
Yes. If you go way back, the earliest recordings of practicing within a magical circle and utilizing certain plants and incenses and various things like that goes back about 7,000 years ago. There's a lot of the ancient circles you find in Europe and stuff like that. The very oldest ones are 7,000, 8,000 years old. And the people in those times were more shamanic in their way, and they would utilize various plant materials to create various potions and incenses and things. And some of those had effects that, when you take them, give you something of a hallucinogenic sort of experience. Not all the time, but some of them do. And so today, scientists have actually discovered, looking at some of the plants that were used, that they have effects like making your heart beat rapidly and making you have visions and things like that. It's a little like being on an LSD trip. And one of the recordings of scientists who studied some of those plants actually had people take them. Those people experienced actually feeling like they were flying.
Dr. Bailey, in the Harry Potter books, working magic seems to be very scientific. Was magic traditionally a replacement for, or maybe a supplement to, mainstream science? And I'm thinking about the alchemists most specifically.
There's a tremendous connection between science and magic throughout really all of history.
And that's where we get witch doctors?
Mm-hmm. And in the Middle Ages especially, there are different types of magic. There are the simple spells that average people use to heal themselves or ward off evil or whatever. And then there are incredibly elaborate, detailed, intellectualized rituals. Alchemy is a branch of this. Astrology was a very, very learned, quasi-scientific aspect of magic. And there were ritual invocations and ritual magic that was very, very detailed and specified, and the experts who utilized it thought of it very much as a science, or at least a quasi-science.
Well, Harry Potter can cast four types of spells: charms, hexes, curses, or jinxes. Are those the same sorts of powers that witches and wizards traditionally have had?
I would say in general terms, yes. Again, these things are never, historically speaking, they get categorized so many ways and at so many different times, and there's never a fixed system. An author like Rowling can simply choose and make create a truly scientific structure and say there are these four categories, they all fit into one. But curses are a definite category, you know, harming, also helping magic, beneficial magic, healing and its opposite, injuring, these sorts of things are long-standing categories.
Do Wiccans cast spells, Reverend McCollum?
Yes, they do, and I'd like to comment something on what you were just talking about, the relationship between science and magic. Wicca sees itself and considers itself to be religion before religion and science split. So it is religion that has spirituality and also accepts and believes in science. And the early witches were the people who were out collecting plants, watching the stars, telling what was going on. And when we were just talking a moment ago about, like, doctors and various things like that, witches were the people who would do something like, say, you know, I'm going to put a spell on this child by taking a spider web and rolling it up and putting it in their mouth to catch the evil spirits that it's taking the child's breath away. Well, today we know that spider web is a source of arachnidin, which is a medication that overcomes asthma. And there are many, many things like that. So a lot of today's medicine and science actually originates with these early practices. As far as doing spells and things like that, you have to understand what a spell actually is. A spell is a highly intentioned prayer, no different than a Christian spell or a Muslim prayer or that sort of thing. It's just that Wiccans look at a different view of the divine itself. And so we might not be praying to Jesus or Allah, we might be praying to the great goddess. And the other mainstream religions look at that as it isn't really prayer because it's not praying to their God.
We have to take a little break, and we'll come back with listener calls and comments that have been sent in through email. My guests are Reverend Patrick McCollum and Dr. Michael Bailey. We're talking about magic, witchcraft, wizardry, shamanism, you name it, on today's Please Explain. Our number is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC.
I was made to love magic, all its wonder to know. But you are lost. just that magic many, many, many years ago.
Put a spell on you. Cause you're mine.
We're back with Please Explain with Dr. Michael Bailey, an assistant professor of history at Iowa State University and co-editor of the scholarly journal Magic, Ritual, and Witchcraft, and with Reverend Patrick McCollum, the statewide Wiccan chaplain for the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. He's written the Wiccan text, Courting the Lady. We are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And before we get to the calls, a listener sent in a comment through our comment line. He writes, "The world is flat. The Earth is the center of the universe. We know these things are not true today. Why should we take magic more seriously than just another form of entertainment?" And let's begin with you, Dr. Bailey, and then we can go to you, Reverend McCollum.
Well, historically speaking, the simple answer to that is that for thousands of years, for virtually all of human history, people have taken it very, very seriously. People have practiced these rites. People have believed in them passionately. And other people have just as passionately opposed them and have been willing to hunt people down and kill for them. So whatever we want to think of it in terms of how it fits into our modern mentality, historically speaking, it's been an enormously important factor.
And incredibly popular if you look at the Harry Potter books.
Certainly, and it's certainly, you know, its popularity and its intriguingness, there's no debate about that.
And what do you want to say, Reverend McCollum?
Well, I'd say, first of all, that it's an interesting question because the people who were first coming up with the concepts that the Earth wasn't flat and the other sort of things that were brought up in that comment were the early witches and those people. So they were the ones when organized religion was thinking the world was flat who was thinking something else. And then the other comment I'd like to make is just that I believe that Dr. Bailey's absolutely right. This has been with us since the beginning of time, and our practices of religion itself in all the faiths really grow out of this desire to know the unknown and to understand the world we live in. And if we were to discontinue magic and everything related to it, we'd also have to discontinue religion.
Let's go to some of our calls. Jim from Union City, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, happy Lammas Day this coming Wednesday, one of the Sabbath days. Yeah, in reference to the previous call, the writings of Newton we had a whole other side. I wish that perhaps they could comment on that, but yeah, the church suppressed Galileo, and I don't think the old religion was necessarily a repository for backward ideas.
Well, many people are very concerned that Sir Isaac Newton also was engaged in alchemical experiments. Would that have just been the normal way at that time, Dr. Bailey?
Newton was at the very juncture where what we would consider to be modern science, the modern scientific method, was stripping itself away from these, what we would now call magical practices, but he was at a point of juncture, and in his age, it was still very common for university-educated men to study biology and physics and astronomy, but also astrology and alchemy and all of these what we would now call or consider occult subjects. To them, it was simply ways of understanding the universe.
We go now to Karen Montclair. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
I had one question. Could you actually be a Catholic and a Wiccan?
Reverend McCollum?
Yes, there are many Wiccans who are Christian and other faiths. In fact, there's a whole scholarly pursuit to study a new way of looking at religion, which a lot of people call Christo-pagans. And these are people who believe in Christianity, but believe that Christianity has gotten away from the sacredness and the metaphysical that began religion, and so they practice both. And there are people in Wicca who practice it as a practice rather than an actual faith. And then there are people who practice it as a faith. So it's kind of like a Buddhism in one respect, that you could belong to another faith and still practice.
Thank you so much for your call. Hector from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to ask, is Wiccan a recognized religion in the U.S. or, for that matter, in any country?
Well, it's obviously recognized in California because they have a Wiccan chaplain.
Okay, but it's like a state-recognized, like the chaplain and the church, well, not the church, but the institution itself can be tax-deducted. That's what I mean, like state-recognized?
May I answer that question?
Of course.
Yes, Wicca is not only a state-recognized religion, but a world-recognized religion. In 2005, the Parliament of the World's Religions held in Barcelona, Spain, the religious leaders from 85 countries came and acknowledged Wicca as an important contributing religious practice in the world. And in the United States, long ago, the courts determined through various court cases that Wicca was a recognized religion, and it's currently practiced, in state institutions. I advise governmental agencies on Wiccan practices so they can make sure they accommodate them. And many schools and other kinds of secular organizations are beginning to recognize Wiccan holidays. Many states in the United States, for example, are beginning to celebrate with their holiday services in school things like the winter solstice.
That's really cool.
Thank you for your call. We go now to Doug from the Bronx. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello. I wonder if Margot Adler is still in Wicca.
Margot definitely is, and actually we did try to get her on the show, but she's on vacation.
That's very interesting. Thank you for that. I just want to say that all these things are about energy, body energy, really, and what body energies really are, and it's not recognized by medical science, actually. It can be found somewhat in Buddhism and Taoism and other Eastern religions. But what I'm really going to refer to is really not an organized religion, and certainly not by the author that brings it to us. I mean, he says that it's not an organized religion. It should never, ever be. It's not meant for that. And I'm referring to in Native America, in Mesoamerica, really, ancient Mexican tradition as claimed, let's say, I think it's true, but others have said it's a hoax, Carlos Castaneda books. Have any comment on...
Michael Bailey?
Castaneda is a very singular personality, but the broadest point, I think, is something that both of us are saying here, that, well, I'm a historian, so I'll say it historically. Historically, magic has always been a part of religion, and again, I would say that organized religions are, in fact, a subset of sort of the magical in the universe. And so all of these interactions, the sharp division between religion and magic is really it's a Western thing and it's a post-Enlightenment thing. It's quite recent, and all of these efforts to overcome it are really tapping into ancient standards, so to speak.
Thank you for your call. Joanne from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment a bit on the fact that I'm not hearing any women's voices, and I know you tried, and all the Wiccan priestesses obviously go on vacation in July, but...
Well, you know, if you had supplied us with a list, we call Margot because we know Margot, and she went on vacation, so we call somebody else, but, you know, we never are going to book the guest that you think is ideal for any segment if you have somebody else in mind.
No. I'm not fussing. I just wanted to inject the perspective here that magic and women have been so intertwined throughout history. I'm a midwife, and I'm an avid historian of midwifery, which, of course, means you have to look at all the witch trials. And what my sense of things is that women had a very deep practical knowledge that worked. And this didn't fit with the theoretical religious, you know, formal agencies of the time.
And Joanne's point is well taken, because most of, like Wicca, for example, is matriarchal. And some people have felt that the persecution of witches was really anti-women, was kind of persecution of women. Do you see it that way?
I do see it that way. There's tremendous historical evidence. There was a special on the History Channel that comes on every year around Samhain, which is the common holiday of Halloween, and a person could watch that at most any time, that talks about the persecution of women in general. In Wicca today, there's actually something of a fallacy that there's a whole lot of women and like a few men, and I actually think that that is something brought about by main society to take power away from women, in that only women would participate in Wicca because there's something wrong with it. There's about a 50-50 split between men and women, and has been since the 1960s. But in ancient times, women were more involved than men were, and definitely were persecuted for that involvement.
We go now to Bob from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Very interesting discussion. And I just wanted to get a little African perspective here. I'm originally from Zimbabwe. And we've been fascinated with magic, supernatural, and traditional healing. And I forget, one of your guests had mentioned how scientists are looking at the science and the herbs used in Wicca. And I just wanted to ask any of your guests if they could comment on Western pharmaceutical companies who are looking into traditional medicine in Africa today for answers and drugs and treatments, HIV symptoms, etc., and are actually ripping them off. I think there have been cases where that traditional medicine has not been given the credit it's due, and something that's very much alive as we speak all over Africa. Any comments?
Well, we have Wiccans in Africa, particularly in South Africa, but in other areas, who work with the indigenous peoples there, and we work back and forth talking about herb lore and the various plants and, you know, magical and shamanic practices. And most definitely, there's a big push by drug companies and organized medicine to move in and kind of co-opt all of those things and utilize them, you know, as over-the-counter drugs. Also in this country, as you probably recognize, many of the health-based natural health-based organizations are starting to get pressured and shut down with homeopathic and natural medicines and having to give way to where you have to go get a prescription to get the same things.
Now, two listeners have called in with the suggestion that Wiccans really are controlling the world.
What an interesting... you know, I have never heard of that, and I've been around for 45 years. In what context?
Well, I'm to be honest, I'm afraid to put them on,
okay.
But they see this as a war between witchcraft and organized religion, I guess.
Well, you know, I have a comment about that. I'm also the national chaplaincy liaison for the American Academy of Religion, with about 11,000 religious scholars. And there's a long time history of people who are in organized religion trying to elevate themselves by taking down other ways of looking at things. But there's
don't forget, in the Bible, Saul got in trouble for consulting with a witch at one point. So there's been a long tradition of that. We have to leave it here, unfortunately. We have a lot of calls, and we're sorry we couldn't get to all of them. My guests have been Reverend Patrick McCullum and Dr. Michael Bailey, and we've been talking about magic and witchcraft and wizardry on today's Please Explain. And this is something that I guess is going to continue as long as there are people who are Wiccans, and also as long as people are reading Harry Potter novels. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you much, Leonard. You have a great day.